Hi, Flaunt Squad. This is your host, Aja, and welcome to Flaunt Performance Podcast, the podcast for the voluptuous runner. Our motto is all bodies are built to run. You can go to flauntperformance.com to pick up 10 laws of power for the voluptuous runner. What can I say about today's guest other than she's a beast? Oh my goodness. I saw her post quite a few times on social media about all these races she's running. I mean, as of this recording, I don't know how many races she's going to have completed by the time the show airs, but as of this recording, she's done maybe 43, 44 half marathons. Just amazing. Her goal is to do 100 half marathons by the time she's 65. Nora Hafley is a beast. And she is so inspirational. So let's sit back and listen to my interview with Nora Hafley. Welcome to the show, Nora.
Hi.
So tell us about why you are doing all of these half marathons.
When I first started doing half marathons, I didn't have this grand plan in mind. I was happy to be able to do one. I didn't think I'd be able to do that. And like everybody else who runs, I thought, well, you have to get faster. You have to keep getting faster. And, that wasn't necessarily in the cards for me because I have bad knees. And the process of trying to get faster involves a lot of training and a lot of speed work, and that just really wasn't good for my knees, and I kept getting injured. So I wanted to find a way to challenge myself without injuring myself, and I found that I could do quantity versus quality. So the idea of like setting a goal to do a certain number of races as opposed to doing them faster was a better goal for me. I started out with the Half Fanatics. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Half Fanatics. It's a club of people that like to do half marathons. And they have progressive levels. And when you first qualify, you have to do 3 races in 90 days, which I didn't think I'd be able to do, but I did it. And that puts you on Neptune. And then you can go on and do like 6 in 6 months, and that puts you on Uranus. And then you can do 4 in 37 days, and that will put you on Saturn. And then I got up to Jupiter by doing 4 in 23 days. And then I realized that it would probably be hard for me to get any further there because it gets progressively harder. So I found out about the 100 Half Marathons Club, and their goal is just to get to 100. It doesn't matter how long it takes you, how slow you are, where you do them. As long as they're official races, they count. And that was the club for me. So I knew I could do this.
You did 4 half marathons in a span of about 3 weeks.
Yes.
How did your training look?
That is my training, really. It's what I've learned is the best thing for me to do is to do my races on the weekends, and during the week, either do short 5K races or take things like aquatic Zumba or other things where I can get activity in without stressing my running muscles, you know. I found that kind of combination works best for me, and I really don't do a lot of training miles.
Okay, so you're doing your half marathons on the weekends, 5K, yeah, and some other cross training during the week.
Yes.
I've never heard of that kind of training. That sounds awesome. Do they teach that in the 100 half marathon club?
No, that was just what I stumbled upon that worked for me. Because it was frustrating when I first started doing this. I used to get injured all the time. And then I would be out for months and have to start all over. And I wanted to find a way where I could do the best I can but not get injured. And that's what worked for me. Everyone's different. I'm older. I'll be 60 next month. I'm, you know, 250 pounds. So what works for me might you know, might not work for somebody else. Other people could probably endure a lot more consistent mileage than I can.
How long does it take you to recover after a half marathon on the weekend?
I can do a half marathon on Sunday and then do my 5K race on Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't take long at all for me.
That's pretty great. Nora, how long have you been running?
I started with 5Ks in 2011. And then in 2012, I did my first and second half marathon. And then 2013, I did my third and fourth. And then in the year in 2014, I did 12 half marathons.
What?
And the following year, I did 15. This year, I think I'm going to hit 20. So.
My goodness. I saw your post in the group that we're a part of, and I'm like, who is this woman? Who is this woman? How many half marathons is she going to do? This is absolutely great. But what emotional thing are you getting from these races?
In the beginning, especially, it was kind of overwhelming for me, just the thought that I could actually do this. Because, you know, when you're heavy, people tend to imply that you can't do things like that. And you don't see that many people that are heavy out there doing it, but you do see them. They're out there. And so it was just sort of overwhelming to think, I can do this. It was a really great feeling of accomplishment. And now it's more being a part of something. There's a huge social network with runners, and they don't care if you're fast or slow or fat or thin or old or young. They're happy that you're out there. And I go to race after race in different states, and I keep running into people that I know. I was in California, 8,000 miles from home, or 3,000 miles from home, however far that California is, clear across the country. And I had never been to California before. I was at mile 8 in a half marathon, and I hear somebody say, "Hey, Nora!" It was a guy I knew from a Facebook group. And he recognized me. And it was just the most awesome moment. And that sort of thing happens all the time.
Let's talk about this traveling half marathon. Okay, so you're traveling. Are you usually on a plane? Or are you, 3,000 miles, I'm pretty sure you caught a plane, right?
The California one, I took a plane. Typically, I mean, I have friends that fly to races every single weekend. I don't have that kind of budget.
What kind of recovery is that, though? How do you recover?
I don't know. I have a friend whose Facebook tag is fly in, run, fly out, repeat.
Wow.
And, I mean, these people will do, 60 races in a year or more. I am not at that level. So, you know, next to my friends, I'm kind of a slacker, but I guess compared to the average person, I do a little more. But I like to try to find races that I can drive to, like, normally. And perfect race would be a local race where I don't have to get a hotel. And in Pennsylvania, there's quite a few that you can do that. You can just drive in the morning, do the race, and drive home. So I'm not a huge travel runner, but I will if I have to, because I really want to get a certain number in, and there aren't that many in Pennsylvania, and there are time limits on a lot of races that I can't make. I have to be careful of that. Some race might have a 3-hour time limit, and I can't do a half marathon in 3 hours, so I can't do that race. So, you know, I search around. I try to find them as close as possible, And the reason I went to California is because I have a niece that lives out there, and I have a niece that lives in Connecticut, and they were going to get together and do a race in Long Beach, and they invited me to come. So, of course, I went.
This is, you do run a lot more than the average person, you see.
I guess, but really, if you saw the circles I travel in, it's like nothing. I'm one of the minor players. Keeps my head from getting big, I guess.
Now, you mentioned that you're a little bit older. You said 60. Mm-hmm. You plan on doing 100 races by the time you are 65, right?
Yes.
What is there a difference running as an older person than a younger person, do you think?
Probably, but I never ran as a younger person, so I don't have a basis for comparison. Although I will say there are a lot of older people out there, and I've noticed that a lot of women 50 plus are just moving in to running. I think because their kids are grown up, their careers are secure, and they finally have time to go out and do these things. Because it's I think the fastest growing age group is women 50 plus.
What, when you awesome. When you were younger, were you an athlete at all?
No. No. No, not at all. I didn't think that was for me. It's funny, I just thought that that was for other people, not for me.
Why?
I was like kind of on the sidelines, you know?
Why did you think it was for other people and not for you?
Partly because when I was growing up, they really didn't have... it was before Title IX. They didn't really have sports for girls when I was in school. I mean, girls were cheerleaders, and I was not a cheerleader type. So I just didn't think sports were for girls. And then as I got older, I guess I just didn't think sports were for heavy people. And it's funny how you can close your mind to all these opportunities that are out there for you because you think it's not for you. And somewhere in my 50s, that I just said, well, you know what? I want to do it. I'm going to do it. And I have to say, like, my first 5K that I showed up at, I really was afraid that it was going to be all 6-foot-tall 20-year-olds who were going to look at me and say, what is this fat old lady doing here? You know, and it wasn't like that at all. There were people with fanny packs and people with sweaters tied around their waist. I was like, okay, I can do this.
So when you were younger, did you have aspirations at all? Maybe somewhere inside of you, I kind of want to run. I really want to get to why you run, Laura.
I remember, well, for a while I dated a guy who coached track. And I went to a lot of track meets. I went to the Penn Relays. We watched the Olympics. And I really, I guess, admired the runners and always kind of was wistfully thinking, boy, I wish I could do that. And it never occurred to me that I could do that. And so the seed was always in there, I think. I always wanted to cross the finish line with a number on my chest.
When did you get beyond the weight limitation of thinking that you were too large to run?
When I sucked up the courage and went out and did my first 5K in 2011. And I don't know, something about, I guess, when you're in your 50s, you stop worrying about what people are going to think and what bad thing could happen. And I just thought, this is something I want to do, so I'm going to do it. I'm scared to death, but I'm going to do it anyway. And I'm so glad. I'm so glad I had the courage to do that because it's changed my life.
Describe that fear of doing that first 5K.
I really thought everyone would be staring at me and wondering what I was doing there. I really had this fear that I just didn't belong there and I had no right to be there. And like the first race, that fear went away. And I wish I could kind of convey that to everybody who you can sort of tell wants to try it but is afraid because they think people are going to look down on them or that they don't belong there. But everybody belongs there. Everybody.
Describe the most difficult race you've ever run.
Always the one I'm doing at the moment, probably, but I think the hardest, geez, I would have to say the Mad Half in Vermont. It was in a ski town, Waitsfield, Vermont, which is total ski town, and it was pretty much 10 miles uphill, and then 2 miles downhill, and then a mile back uphill to the finish. I think I got 153 floors on my Fitbit that day. I was in, like, my entire body was hurting by mile 5. And I had to sit on a guardrail for a while because I couldn't keep going. My legs were like jelly. I had never experienced such relentless hills in my life. And it was raining. So it was, but if, and that one took me over 5 hours. It was like 5 hours and 45 minutes or some ridiculously long time because of all those hills. But, you know, I felt so happy when I finished. I was thrilled. There's a picture of me with a huge smile at the finish line. You would never know I had suffered for 5 hours and 45 minutes.
Nora, when you, a lot of people, when we run, we get into the habit of going to the same track or the same trail or whatever, and we train our brains on that trail. But you're going to different places all the time running.
Right.
You can't, you don't give yourself an opportunity to get too used to one particular trail or one particular track.
No, so, I get bored very easily.
I would bet. But what is the mindset you have to train yourself to know, okay, how is your mindset set up since you don't train on one particular trail or track?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
I don't think I understand always, it either.
One thing I always do if I can is try to check ahead of time. If it's a race I've never done, I'll check ahead of time to see if I can find out what the course is like and what the elevation gain and loss might be like, where the hills are in the race. Because to me, there's a big difference if the hill's at mile two than if it's at mile 12 and a half. Because a hill at mile 12 and a half is like torture. So I always kind of want to mentally prepare myself for what the course is like. And if I've done a race before, I know where all the fun parts are.
Okay.
And I don't know if that was your question, but it was an answer, so.
No, it was kind of my question. And what was the race that you felt most proud of?
Of course, my first, of course. But I think the one where I felt the most like a beast was last April at Garden Spot Village in New Holland, Pennsylvania. There was a blizzard. I did 13.1 miles in a blizzard.
Oh, my God.
And, I mean, there were little avalanches falling off my hood, and my hydration belt was filling up with snow. it was a bona fide blizzard. There was about 6.5 inches of slush on the road. And it's an extremely hilly race. And I was really kind of afraid of sliding down that hill. So I went really, really slow. And so I got kind of hypothermic. And they put me in a heating tent when I got there. They took one look at me and stuck me in this tent. So I guess I would be pretty proud that I persevered at that race. Didn't give up.
What did you tell yourself during that race to keep going?
One of the tricks I do is I tell myself that I can quit anytime. Like, all right, you're only going to go another more mile, and then you're just going to tell them to come get you, you know, to tell the people at the water station to send somebody out for you. And that keeps me going because I keep thinking, well, I have an out. And I never do. I never asked for a ride back, you know, but... I think that's what keeps me from feeling like I'm trapped out there.
When you were running in that blizzard, I'm assuming that you had to have on the running, the trail things that you put on your feet, the yaks. Because I'm running.
You know, I didn't. I didn't have them, and I own them, but I had never used them before, and I guess I was afraid to try to use them in a race. And I probably should have used them because I probably would have been able to go faster. I guess I didn't. It was April in Pennsylvania, and I just didn't expect a lot of snow accumulation. Where do you live?
We're in the Chicago area, so I completely understand. You get caught with a snowstorm in April.
Yeah, and it wasn't, I don't think a blizzard was forecasted. It was just forecasted there might be, like, some snow, and I thought, I can live with it. And I have Gore-Tex sneakers, so... I thought, well, that would keep my feet from getting wet, but that won't help you in 6 inches of slush. And I think it snowed way more than anybody expected. I don't think people expected an actual blizzard. I mean, there was snow blowing either in my eyes or in my ears the entire time.
Wow.
It was pretty intense.
Nora,
I felt good about that.
I bet. I think the hardest ones, that's when you feel the most proud because you say, I got through that.
Yes, I always... I always get sort of ridiculously happy when I'm running in the rain, and I don't know why. And sometimes I think there's something wrong with me because I'll get this, like, I'll start grinning out there and then, pouring rain. sometimes I always joke that there's something wrong with me, that I love these bad weather races.
How has running these races changed your whole perspective on other aspects of your life?
I think it has given me more confidence to try things that I thought I couldn't do. For example, paddling. There's a trip that there's a local, the Schuylkill River Heritage Area does this trip every year. It's a 112-mile kayak trip on the Schuylkill River. It's a 7-day trip. And, you know, at one time I would have watched with envy while other people went, and I would not have thought, well, I'm going to try that. But, you know, I had never paddled on a river. I didn't know a soul that was doing this trip, and I signed up for all 7 days. And you know what? I did it. I learned how to paddle, and I finished the trip. And I've done it now 3 times. But I don't think I would have had the courage to do that before I tried running. Mm. If that makes any sense.
And that makes total sense. I want to go back to your training, though. It's just very intriguing. I haven't heard this before. It's just running on the weekends and doing the cross training. What's an average training week look like? Details, please.
I don't know that I have an average training week. I do all sorts of things. It really depends on, let's just say it's summertime, or no, springtime, because I don't do half marathons in the summer anymore because I have problems with heat. So I cram them all in the spring and the fall. So let's say it's a nice spring week. I might do a half marathon on Saturday, and then I'll have some midweek races. Some of the clubs I belong to have, you know, nighttime races during the work week. So there'll be like a Wednesday night race, and maybe I'll do a Tuesday night aqua zumba class. And then maybe on Thursday I'll take a short hike after work. And that's it. I don't have a mileage training goal. I mean, I did, for my first half marathon, I followed a program. If you do want to hear about training, I did do that once. I followed a program that was written by Michelle Stanton. She used to be the fitness editor for Prevention Magazine. And she sent me this program where you do 3 miles on Tuesday and 3 miles on Thursday and 4 miles on Saturday, and, you know, and you gradually build up to longer mileage. I did do that for my first half marathon.
How do you stay in shape during the summertime since you don't do the races?
I will do 5Ks. I just won't do half marathons. I do a lot of paddling in the summertime. I like to swim and do water things like aqua zumba again, because sometimes they have it outdoors now in the summertime. Aqua zumba is perfect low impact workout, and it's fun. things like that. And I do a lot of hiking in the summer too.
And you said that you have knee problems as well.
I do.
How do you keep your knees in shape?
I used to go to a physician and get injections of hyaluronic acid. And I started, and this is going to sound like a sales pitch, but I started using this stuff called Vital Proteins. I have to go look at it because I don't remember. Vital Proteins, collagen peptides, okay? I put 2 scoops in my coffee every day. It's like a powder. It's like a protein powder. And I have not had to have a shot in my knees since I started using it. And that was last year. I think last July I started using it. And I haven't had a shot in my knee since.
Wow.
So, and it's supposed to help with joint problems, but most things that are supposed to be good for joint problems don't really work. But this one has worked for me. So, that's what keeps my knees in shape now. Also, I do have weight training equipment in the house, and I found that doing a proper squat, if you do a good proper squat, that helps build up the muscles around the knees and helps to avoid knee pain. Yeah, I do weight training too, so I forgot to mention that.
Nora, you're like the all-around athlete.
I just want to move. You know, I just love it.
Did you ever think you'd be called an athlete?
Never in my life. I did a few years ago, in 2012, I think it was, I did a race walking clinic with a world-class athlete. His name is Dave McGovern. He has qualified for the Olympic trials, I think, 8 times. I mean, he's coached the world team, and he's up there, you know. And I took his, I wanted to see how fast I could walk, and I took his race walking clinic. And everybody at the beginning had to stand up and introduce themselves. And there were all these triathletes and marathoners and all these, you know, really interesting people introducing themselves. And when I stood up, I said, well, I'm not an athlete, but I've done this, this, and that. And Dave McGovern said, lady, you're an athlete. And it always stuck with me to have someone of his caliber to tell me that I'm an athlete. And so after that, I said, you know, who am I to argue with Dave McGovern? I'm an athlete.
Did that really change the way you approach different activities, knowing that you're an athlete? How?
It really did. It really did, because it's hard to explain, but it gave it a validity. I felt I had the right to be there, the right to compete, the right to try my best, the right to train, and not have it be, I don't even know how to describe. And not have it be something that people could make fun of. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not a joke. It's a real thing. And I can really do this. And I'm entitled to do this. I have a rightful place. And that made a big difference to me. I had someone, you know, one day, it was the day after my first half marathon, I went on a hike. And one of the ladies that was hiking looked, you know, I said, oh, I did a half marathon yesterday. And she looked me up and down, and she said, I don't believe you do half marathons.
What?
And that just always stuck with me, the way she'd give me the, you know, head to toe and said that. And I thought, that's just not right. I to have someone tell me to my face, I don't believe you. I felt like saying, why don't you believe me? And I should have. I should have asked her and put her on the spot and said, why don't you believe me? But I didn't think of it. I was embarrassed.
I think you just spoke to a lot of our listeners, because of course we're all heavier runners and people who want to be runners as well, who may be sitting on the sidelines. How do you suggest people get beyond that fear of being made fun of or looked down upon?
Well, I'm not a psychologist, okay? I am an athlete. Remember that.
Right.
you kind of have to overcome it one time, and then you'll see. And it would help. It always helps to find somebody like me, who's willing to go along with you, like for moral support, and then you can see what the running community is really like, because a runner would never look you up and down and say, I don't believe you do half marathons. This woman was not a runner. A runner would just say, oh, cool, like, which ones have you done? Are you going to be at such and such race?
That's true.
That's what a runner would say, and there's such a welcoming community, and that was a big surprise to me. I thought they would be what I used to call extra snobs. I thought that's what they would be like, and they're really not. And there may be a few scattered in there, but I don't run into them. I run into people who are just warm and welcoming and happy that I'm there, and they cheer me on. The race I did on Saturday, there was a gentleman who I met, I think, twice, and he finished maybe an hour before I did, but he came back out on the trail to look for me. And ran in with me the rest of the way.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that's what runners do. And that is not the first time that's happened. I've had runners come back out with a bottle of water. Like people I barely know. It's so, the social aspect is huge for me. It's a great community.
What other athletic aspirations do you have?
I would like to get stronger. I would like to see how much I could lift, and I haven't even begun to explore that. So don't ask me how much I lift. But I have my supervisor at work is a competitive power lifter, and she's kind of inspired me to want to explore that a little bit. Because she said she started in her 30s and didn't know she'd be good at it. And she now has a state record in Pennsylvania for, I think it was deadlift, 450 pounds. And she's little. She's like 150 pounds or something. So she's kind of inspired me to think about that. But that is less of a social thing than running is. And I also am a wannabe triathlete.
So when are you going to do your first triathlon?
Well, I've done 5 indoor triathlons.
Well, you are a triathlete.
No. Well, I know. I guess I am a triathlete.
Yes.
But I don't consider them real triathlons because they're not outside. But I have done, yeah, there's an indoor triathlon locally that you don't have to swim in the pool. You can run in the pool. And I'm really good at running in water. I'm not all that good at swimming. So I really like this one because all I have to do is run for 10 minutes in the pool. And I can get more laps than most people swimming. And then you just ride 30 minutes on a bike, 20 minutes on a treadmill. And so everybody finishes at the same time. And they just track your distance. So I kind of like that. Like there's nobody waiting for me at the finish. Like, and you're not thinking, oh my God, I have 10 more miles to go. It's just a matter of time. Like anybody can exercise for an hour. You know, that's the way I look at it. So that's why I like that.
Yeah, I love that idea. I've never even thought about an indoor triathlon.
Because the outdoor tri, there's always a chance of either drowning or falling off your bike. And I'm just not there yet mentally.
<You're> not.
Because I can do a half marathon without training. I mean, I do it all the time. But I would not even attempt to do a real outdoor sprint tri without training because I think it's dangerous.
But it took time for you to get up to that level of being able to do a triathlon. I mean, being able to do a half marathon without training, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because I trained for my first one, and I sort of trained. Well, my first and second were real close together. So I was still training for the second one when I was doing the first one. And then I think 6 months later, I had sort of started training for the next, but then I was injured, and so the training kind of fell apart, and then the following year, I just did one in April, I think, and then just kept doing them. I did one every month, so I really didn't have to train much in between. I just did my 5Ks and my usual activity, my aquatic classes and stuff like that.
So I guess
I found that I didn't get injured doing it that way. So
okay. I think it's almost like you have to get beyond that fear of not training enough and just going out there and doing it and understanding that your body can do it because it's in shape. You've done other activities.
Right. And there are other mental things. I'm not a type A person. I don't feel like, oh, I got to catch that guy in front of me or, you know, or I have to do better than I did last time. I am out there to have a good time, to challenge myself without stressing myself. And wherever I finish, I finish. If I finish last, I don't care. I don't have that. I don't put that pressure on myself. I really, my goal is to have a good time and to collect bling.
I love that. You said challenge yourself without stressing yourself.
Yes.
Nor
some people can't do that. Some people can't go out there without going all out. Yeah. I can.
Do you think that, like, what kind of mind shift does one need to go through in order to not go out there and just try to go all out? Just go out there and have a good time. I wonder what that process is like.
Yeah, I don't know if you can turn a type A into whatever I am. I don't know. I know some people who won't do races because they can't win. And I thought, well, that's such a shame. Because they used to win, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now for them, it's a huge step down. I never did anything, so for me, this is a huge improvement. this is me doing all these half marathons. Who would have ever thought? Sometimes I look at my bling rack with my 42 medals on it, and I like, my eyes tear up because I can't believe it's me.
How did you get beyond, or have you ever thought of movement, running, exercise as just something for weight loss?
Years ago, I think I joined the two. Exercise was for weight loss. But, I mean, I've been dieting and exercising for 45 years, and my feeling, if it's not going to happen by now, I'm going to stop thinking about that. I'm going to stop thinking about exercise as a way to weight loss, and more as exercise as a way to feeling great. And exercise is a way of enhancing my life. Because weight loss just is not really going to happen for me. And I no longer care.
What did you have to go through something in order to get to that point?
I think about like maybe 150 diets.
Just 150?
Every time you diet, and I don't know if this happens to you, but like for me, every time I would diet, I would gain it back plus more. So I dieted my way up to 250 pounds. And I thought, you know what? Let's stop dieting. And just, like, I eat when I'm hungry. I stop when I'm full. I've since I stopped dieting, I now have, like, natural hunger cues, which when you're dieting your whole life, you don't know when you're hungry and when you're not hungry. You don't know anything about, like, what your body's craving because you're always following some list of telling you what to eat. And so, like, I eat more naturally now. I just kind of follow what my body wants, and it keeps me healthy and it keeps me happy, and you know, I've had to accept the fact that I'm never going to be a size 10.
It's almost like giving up dieting has given you more of a connection with your body.
Absolutely. It's more of an intuitive eating.
Nora, when's the next race?
Oh, Saturday.
Saturday, of course.
Going up to Connecticut.
Wow. So how can people find you? How can they follow you and be inspired? Social media handles? How can people find you?
I'm on Facebook, and I belong to, you know, the Fit Fatties and a few other, I guess, Facebook groups, Half Fanatics. I don't post much in Half Fanatics, though. 100 Half Marathons Club.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Nora. You are such an inspiration.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.